First off, our after-dinner speaker this week is our mathematician. Back to crunch some numbers, and this evening bring us a bit of geometry. Kia ora, Dylan.
Kia ora.
Welcome back tonight.
Thank you very much for having me.
So you want to talk about the shortest path between two points on a three-dimensional surface, and obviously I'm thinking of planet Earth.
Right.
A sphere, but that's just the start, right?
Yeah, so finding the shortest path between two points on a surface is pretty important if you're trying to navigate your way from one part of the Earth to another. So people have been doing that for a long time. And it's not as simple as drawing a straight line on a map, obviously. So you will have noticed that if you're flying, say, from Los Angeles to London, then the path that the plane takes is nothing like a straight line on the map.
Yeah, you go way north. You go over the Arctic and then you go back down south again.
It looks like you're going way out of your way, but that's because of the distortion that is produced by projecting the surface of the Earth onto that two-dimensional map. It distorts shortest paths so that they look like curves.
You know, because if we were travelling at the same latitude from London, because say if you're going from Los Angeles to another country at about a similar latitude, if you stay at the same latitude, your line will be straight on a map. But that's much, much further, isn't it?
If you stay on the same longitude, your line will be straight on a map. So if you're going directly north or south, then it will look like a straight line on the map.
Yeah.
If you're travelling on the equator, it will also look like a straight line on the map.
Yes, yes.
But otherwise, there'll be a bit of a curve in it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and that's because of that distortion that you get when you project a three-dimensional surface onto a two-dimensional map. So, in fact, the shortest paths between two points on a sphere, they're called great circle routes. And the way you calculate a great circle is you imagine your two points on the surface of the Earth that you want to travel between, say, Los Angeles and London.
Yeah.
And now imagine a plane which cuts through the middle of the Earth and which also contains those two points.
So it is quicker to go through the middle of the Earth.
I
thought it would be.
Yeah, if you're trying to get to somewhere directly opposite.
But hang on, we can't go that way.
No, that's right.
So there's all that iron down there gets in the way.
The plane,
it's quite hot too.
It sure is, yeah. The plane that is cutting through the Earth is just a mental image to help you calculate the great circle.
Okay, right. Back to mental images then.
Sure. So if I cut the Earth in half, and I did it in such a way that I cut through the very center of the Earth, as well as cutting through London and Los Angeles, then the cut that I make is going to describe a curve on the surface of the Earth.
Yes.
Between London and Los Angeles.
Right.
And that is the shortest path between London and Los Angeles. That's called a great circle route.
Okay. Another way I was thinking of it is if you're going to the center of the Earth, you'll go up. When you get to the center of the Earth, you'll go up 90. You'll turn 90 degrees to go back up, and you'll come up in London.
Yeah.
The other thing is those three, the circle plus those two lines to the center of the Earth are all on the same plane,
correct,
aren't they?
Yep,
right.
That's it. That's a nice way of visualizing it. So draw a line from London to the center of the Earth, draw a line from Los Angeles to the center of the Earth, and then those two lines describe a plane. And that plane cuts the surface of the Earth in a great circle route.
As you said, if I was the one place on the Earth, if you're going... Now, hang on. If we're on a two-dimensional map, if we go north to south, the shortest route will it be a straight line?
Yeah, on the map. It will look like a straight line on the map.
The only way if we're going east to west would be if we're travelling on the equator.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
But there is some sense in which great circle routes are straight lines, right? So mathematicians now have this quite broad conception of what a straight line is. A straight line really depends on the space that you're moving around in. If the space you are moving around in is the surface of a sphere, what are the straight lines? Well, they are great circle routes. They may not look like straight lines when we project onto a two-dimensional geometry, but that's a different geometry. So I like thinking of great circles as being straight lines. They are straight lines, just in a different version of geometry.
Now, it's easy enough to work this out on the globe, but the thing that caught your eye was not stuff about the globe. It was it's projecting the shortest path on a three-dimensional object, such as a cube or or that's where you're more. That's what you're more interested in.
That you're right. That is what caught my eye, because there's been this relatively recent bit of work about shortest paths on the surfaces of the Platonic solids.
What does that? Is that anything to do with a Platonic relationship?
Well, it is in the sense that they are both named after Plato.
Did Plato first describe these Platonic solids?
He was one of the first to describe them, along with some other Greek mathematicians. But probably they were discovered in an ornamental sense before Plato and his contemporaries started thinking about them. I mean, obviously, people have been playing with cubes for as long as they've been able to carve wood or stone. And a cube is the most familiar example of a Platonic solid.
But it's not the only one. So how do you define a Platonic solid?
Okay, so the Platonic solids are the regular convex polyhedra. Now, that sounds complicated, but it's not really that complicated. So it just means it's a three-dimensional shape. Every face of this three-dimensional shape needs to be a regular polygon. And that means that all the sides should have the same length and all the internal angles should be the same. So a square is a regular polygon, an equilateral triangle is a regular polygon. Okay, so every face of the solid should be a regular polygon, and there should be the same number of faces meeting at every corner of the solid. And that's nearly the definition. That describes the regular part. I haven't said what convex means, but convex is actually pretty simple. Just means there are no corners sticking into the solid.
Right.
So there are no, you wouldn't be able to use any part of the solid to hold any water.
Okay.
That's the way of thinking about it.
Yeah, well, that's...
If there's a corner sticking in, you can sort of fill it up with water. Yeah.
You can't convex do that. Means, you can't do that with a dice.
Can't do that with a cube.
Exactly. Can't do that with an octahedron.
Correct.
That's made out of triangles, right?
Correct.
So a tetrahedron's made out of triangles?
That's it. So a tetrahedron has four faces, and every face is an equilateral triangle. So that's like a little three, it looks like a pyramid, almost a pyramid, but it's only got it's got one face sitting on the ground and then three faces in the ground, sticking up in the air, not like the four-sided pyramids in Egypt.
Yeah.
The octahedron also has equilateral triangles as faces, but it's got eight of them. It's like two four-sided pyramids glued together at the base. Then you've got the cube, the most familiar of them. Then there's the dodecahedron, which is perhaps a little less familiar because its faces are regular pentagons, five-sided polygons. Ah. And you've got 12 of those, 12 faces. And finally, there is the icosahedron, which has 20 faces, and every one of them is an equilateral triangle. So if you've ever played Dungeons & Dragons, you've seen these shapes, right? Because we use them for dice.
Ah, right. Okay.
So the tetrahedron is the four-sided die, and the octahedron is the eight-sided die.
Now, how would you describe? I mean, okay. Now, if we've got two points on a die, say.
Yeah.
And they're on different faces.
Yeah.
Now, how do you work out what's the shortest distance between those two points traveling across the surface of the dice?
Yeah, because you're going to have to turn a corner, aren't you?
Yeah.
If they're on different faces, you can't just draw a line. So here's a way to visualize it. Okay, so I want to imagine that I've drawn a long straight line on this desk. Okay, and I've drawn it with some kind of marker pen, which it leaves wet ink behind. So now I'm going to take my cube, and I'm going to sort of roll it along that line. It's a little bit hard to imagine exactly what I mean by rolling a cube, but you can probably get a picture of it.
You move it one face to another.
I flip it from one face to another face, yeah.
Along.
So I always pivot around one edge of the cube, don't I? Sort of like flip it over from one face to another while pivoting around one edge. That's what I mean by rolling the cube along the line. Okay, and as I roll the cube along the line, some of that ink is going to transfer onto the surface of the cube. And that's a straight line.
Right.
That's what a straight line path looks like on the cube.
And is that going to be the shortest path?
That's the shortest path. That's how you get every possible shortest path on a cube.
That doesn't sound very mathematical.
Yeah, well, there is a way of making that slightly more rigorous.
How do you describe that with numbers? Those numbers might blind us.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the
we
intuition...
We might start to glaze over, but...
Often in mathematics, the intuition and the rigor are two different things. You get your intuition with a little thought experiment, as we've just talked about, and then the rigor involves doing some arithmetic or algebra.
Well, you know, going back to the sphere, if you wanted to get the shortest path, you would just get a bit of string, find your two points, and stretch the string straight.
Yep.
And those would be the shortest, wouldn't
same
it?
Idea. Same idea. Yep.
You don't have to worry about those centre-of-the-earth planes and whatever.
Yep.
Cutting the earth in half.
That's going to work on the cube as well. So take a rubber band, stretch it out, pin the two ends of the... I've cut the rubber band in half, just to be clear. So take some elastic, pin either end of the elastic to the two points you want to find a straight line in, and stretch the elastic taut. That's going to find a straight line path.
Now, I saw something in your notes that caught my eye, and this was that when if I leave here and start walking in a straight line,
doesn't
matter where I go, as long as I remain going in the same direction, I will come back.
Yeah,
I'll come back behind me. I'll be back here on planet Earth.
That's right. If you walk around the surface of a globe following a shortest path, I'm going to start saying geodesic because geodesic is the name for these shortest paths.
Right, on three-dimensional surfaces, cubes or spheres.
Exactly, yeah.
Or tetrahedrons.
Yeah. If I walk along a geodesic path on any globe, I will eventually return to where I start from. But that's not true of the cube, which is really strange. So I can start from a position on the cube and walk along a geodesic path and never return to where I start from. It's quite counterintuitive, isn't it?
Never?
Never at all. Yeah, you can.
Infinite.
You'll keep on walking forever and ever and ever around this cube.
Eventually the cube will run out of... Surely you've covered every single bit of the cube?
Well, you'll get arbitrarily close to any given point on the cube, but you will never land exactly where you are. You'll get infinitesimally close, but you'll never actually land on your starting
point. Is that any straight line on a cube or just some straight lines?
Just some carefully chosen straight lines.
Carefully chosen ones, such as?
Well, it has to do with the existence of irrational numbers. Okay, so an irrational number is just a number which cannot be written as a fraction of whole numbers.
Okay. Such as pi.
Pi is probably the most famous example of an irrational number. It cannot be written as a fraction of whole numbers. I have to be a little bit careful because you can write pi as a fraction. I'll just take pi and I'll divide it by 1, and that's a pi written as a fraction, but that's kind of a cheating way of doing it.
Yeah.
So when I say written as a fraction, I mean a fraction of whole numbers.
Yeah.
Okay, so take an irrational number like pi. I'm going to use that number to construct a path on the cube which never returns to its starting point. Okay, and the way I do it is I imagine a square grid. Okay, so a square grid extending infinitely in every direction, just like graph paper. Okay, and the squares in that grid, they are sort of going to correspond to where the faces of my cube are going to lie as I flip it over and over the graph paper. Okay, so it's always going to go from one square of the grid to another square of the grid as I roll it. Now, I'm going to draw a line on that grid, starting at a grid point with gradient pi. And that sounds complicated, but it's not really. It just means that...
So if you move along...
Yep.
So if you move along 1, you're going to go up 3.142, etc., etc. Et
go up exactly pi. Yeah, exactly. Now, the fact that pi is irrational means that that line will never run into another crossing point of the grid. That's one of the consequences of the fact that pi is irrational.
Is there a link between the fact that pi describes the circumference of a circle, and we're dealing here with a straight line on a cube?
That's a bit of a coincidence because I could have used any irrational number, like, say, the square root of 2, and that would do the same trick for me. Yeah, pi is just a nice, familiar example of an irrational number, but square root of 2 is just as good for this experiment.
Now, there are some of those shapes you were talking about before where they've been struggling to find lines, a straight line that can go through, that comes back on itself at all. Now, what particular shape is that?
Yeah,
it's the one that starts with D, isn't it?
That's the dodecahedron, yeah, the 12-sided shape.
Made of pentagons.
Made of pentagons, yeah.
Have they never been able to find a way of having a line that goes back, straight line that goes back
so
to the originating?
This question actually is, it's one of the weird things about this question is that it's a relatively recent question, the last 15 years or so far as I can tell, which is surprising because people have been fascinated by these platonic solids for 2,500 years.
Since Plato's time.
Yeah, exactly. More than 2,500 years. And so it's kind of surprising that they were able to find a new question. So here's what the question is. If I look at a geodesic path on the cube, I start at a corner and I walk along a geodesic and I return to the same corner, well, you'll notice that I have passed through the opposite corner on my way to return to my starting point.
Yes.
So I sort of go up one face until halfway along the edge, and then I do the same thing on another face until I reach the opposite corner, and then I keep on repeating that until I return to my starting point. So one property of the cube is that if you take any geodesic path, which starts at a corner and returns to the same corner, it passes through another corner, a different corner. And that's true for the tetrahedron, it's true for the icosahedron, and it's true for the octahedron. But a relatively recent discovery shows us that the dodecahedron is different. So you can find a geodesic path on the dodecahedron starting at the same starting at a corner, returning to that same corner, without passing through any other corner. So that's kind of cool.
And that's what some mathematicians did recently.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I'm looking at that. You've got it in this, and hopefully we can get these notes. Are we allowed to put these notes on our webpage?
Why not?
I hope, because then people could see.
That's
right. It looks relatively easy to do it, but I guess as a mathematician, you're not allowed to pass it. You've got to get it. It's the shortest possible line. It's got to go back to the corner it started on, but it can't go through any others.
It can't go through any other corner on the dodecahedron.
And it's taken us 2,500 years to work this out.
Well, to be fair, people haven't been thinking about that particular question for 2,500 years, but they have been thinking hard about these platonic solids. So it's kind of surprising that something new in the geometry of the platonic solids has come to light relatively recently.
In about 60 seconds, are there any other geodesic puzzles we haven't solved yet?
Oh, that's a good question. In about 60 seconds, I'll tell you about the Poincaré conjecture, which is about curves on a three-dimensional version of the sphere. And it's about curves that can be shrunk down to a point without cutting through the sphere. And the question of the Poincaré conjecture was, does that characterize the three-dimensional version of the sphere? And we now know, as of a little more than 10 years ago, that the answer is yes. It was one of the great unsolved questions in mathematics for a long time.
That could be another talk, because I've blinded me.
That was pretty fast.
Yeah. Lovely to have you in, Dylan. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Dylan Mayhew back with more geometry, more numbers to crunch in about 2.5 months. Hopefully, though, the notes he sent through to me are up on the webpage, rnz.co.nz/night, so you can see what he was talking about with your own eyes.